The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 15, The Cosmic Consciousness, page 409. To realize and unite oneself with the active Brahman is to exchange, perfectly or imperfectly, according as the union is partial or complete, the individual for the cosmic consciousness. The ordinary existence of man is not only an individual, but an egoistic consciousness. It is, that is to say, the individual soul, or jivatman, identifying himself with the notice of his mental, vital, physical experiences in the movement of universal nature. That is to say, with his mind-created ego, and, less intimately, with the mind, life, body, which receive the experiences. Less intimately, because of these, he can say, my mind, life, body. He can regard them as himself, yet partly as not himself, and something rather which he possesses and uses. But of the ego he says, it is I. By detaching himself from all identification with mind, life, and body, he can get back from his ego to the consciousness of the true individual, the jivatman, who is the real possessor of mind, life, and body. Looking back from this individual to that of which it is the representative and conscious figure, he can get back to the transcendent consciousness of pure self, absolute existence, or absolute non-being, three poises of the same eternal reality. But between the movement of universal nature and this transcendent existence, possessor of the one and cosmic self of the other, is the cosmic consciousness, the universal Purusha, of whom all nature is the Prakriti, or active conscious force. We can arrive at that, become that, whether by breaking the walls of the ego laterally, as it were, and identifying oneself with all existences in the One, or else from above, by realizing the pure self or absolute existence in its outgoing, immanent, all-embracing, all-constituting self-knowledge and self-creative power. The immanent, silent self in all is the foundation of this cosmic consciousness for the experience of the mental being. It is the witness pure and omnipresent who, as the silent conscious soul of the cosmos, regards all the activity of the universe. It is Satchidananda, for whose delight universal nature displays the eternal procession of her works. We are aware of an unwounded delight, a pure and perfect presence, an infinite and self-contained power present in ourselves and all things, not divided by their divisions, not affected by the stress and struggle of the cosmic manifestation. It is within all, but it is superior to it all. Because of that, all this exists, but that does not exist because of all this. It is too great to be limited by the movement in time and space which it inhabits and supports. This foundation enables us to possess, in the security of the divine existence, the whole universe within our own being. We are no longer limited and shut in by what we inhabit, but, like the divine, contain in ourselves all that, for the purpose of the movement of nature we consent to inhabit. We are not mind or life or body, but the informing and sustaining soul, silent, peaceful, eternal, which possesses them. And since we find this soul everywhere, sustaining and informing and possessing all lives and minds and bodies, we cease to regard it as a separate and individual being in our own. In it, all this moves and acts. Within all this, it is stable and immutable. Having this, we possess our eternal self-existence at rest in its eternal consciousness and bliss. Next, we have to realize this silent self as Lord of all the action of universal nature. We have to see that it is this same self-existent who is displayed in the creative force of his eternal consciousness. All this action is only his power and knowledge and self-delight going abroad in his infinite being to do the works of his eternal wisdom and will. We shall realize the divine, the eternal self of all, first, as the source of all action and inaction, of all knowledge and ignorance, of all delight and suffering, of all good and evil, perfection and imperfection, of all force and form, of all the outgoing of nature from the eternal divine principle, and of all the return of nature towards the divine. We shall realize it next as itself, going abroad in its power and knowledge, for the power and knowledge are itself, not only the source of their works, but the creator and doer of their works, one in all existences. For the many souls of the universal manifestation are only faces of the one divine. The many minds, lives, bodies are only his masks and disguises. We perceive each being to be the universal Narayana, presenting to us many faces. We lose ourselves in that universality and perceive our own mind, life, and body as only one presentation of the self, while all whom we formerly conceived of as others are now to our consciousness our self in other minds, lives, bodies. All force and idea and event and figure of things in the universe are only manifest degrees of this self, values of the divine in his eternal self-figuration. Thus, viewing things and beings, we may see them first as if they were parts and parcels of his divided being. The Gita speaks of the jiva as a portion of the Lord. But the realization and the knowledge are not complete unless we go beyond this idea of quality and space and division, by which there comes the experience of less and more, large and small, part and whole, and see the whole infinite everywhere. We must see the universe and each thing in the universe as in its existence and secret consciousness and power and delight, the indivisible divine in its entirety. However much the figure it makes to our minds may appear only as a partial manifestation. When we possess thus the divine as at once the silent and surpassing witness and the active Lord and all-constituting being, without making any division between these aspects, we possess the whole cosmic divine, embrace all of the universal self and reality, are awake to the cosmic consciousness. What will be the relation of our individual existence to this cosmic consciousness to which we have attained? For since we have still a mind and body and human life, our individual existence persists, even though our separate individual consciousness has been transcended. It is quite possible to realize the cosmic consciousness without becoming that. We can see it, that is to say, with the soul, feel it, and dwell in it. We can even be united with it without becoming wholly one with it. In a word, we may preserve the individual consciousness of the Jivatman within the cosmic consciousness of the universal self. We may preserve yet greater distinctness between the two and enjoy the relations between them. We may remain, in a way, entirely the individual self while participating in the bliss and infinity of the universal self. Or we may possess them both as a greater and lesser self. One we feel pouring itself out in the universal play of the divine consciousness and force, the other in the action of the same universal being through our individual soul center or soul form for the purposes of an individual play of mind, life, and body. But the summit of this cosmic realization by knowledge is always the power to dissolve the personality in universal being, to merge the individual in the cosmic consciousness, to liberate even the soul form into the unity and universality of the spirit. This is the laya, dissolution, or moksha, liberation, at which the yoga of knowledge aims. This may extend itself, as in the traditional yoga, to the dissolution of mind, life, and body itself, into the silent self, or absolute existence. But the essence of the liberation is the merging of the individual in the infinite. When the yogin no longer feels himself to be a consciousness situated in the body, or limited by the mind, but has lost the sense of division in the boundlessness of an infinite consciousness, that which he set out to do is accomplished. Afterwards, the retaining or non-retaining of the human life is a circumstance of no essential importance, for it is always the formless one who acts through its many forms of the mind and life and body, and each soul is only one of the stations from which it chooses to watch and receive and actuate its own play. That into which we merge ourselves in the cosmic consciousness is Sachidananda. It is one eternal existence that we then are. One eternal consciousness which sees its own works in us and others. One eternal will or force of that consciousness which displays itself in infinite workings. One eternal delight which has the joy of itself and all its workings. It is itself stable, immutable, timeless, spaceless, supreme, and it is still itself in the infinity of its workings, not changed by their variations, not broken up by their multiplicity, not increased or diminished by their ebbings and flowings in the seas of time and space, not confused by their apparent contrarieties, or limited by their divinely willed limitations. Satchidananda is the unity of the many-sidedness of manifested things. Satchidananda is the eternal harmony of all their variations and oppositions. Satchidananda is the infinite perfection which justifies their limitations and is the goal of their imperfections. So much for the essential relation. But we have to see also the practical results of this internal transformation. It is evident that by dwelling in this cosmic consciousness, our whole experience and valuation of everything in the universe will be radically changed. As individual egos, we dwell in the ignorance and judge everything by a broken, partial, and personal standard of knowledge. We experience everything according to the capacity of a limited consciousness and force, and are therefore unable to give a divine response or set the true value upon any part of cosmic experience. We experience limitation, weakness, incapacity, grief, pain, struggle, and its contradictory emotions. And we accept these things and their opposites as opposites in an eternal duality and cannot reconcile them in the eternity of an absolute good and happiness. We live by fragments of experience and judge by our fragmentary values each thing and the whole. When we try to arrive at absolute values, we only promote some partial view of things to do duty for a totality in the divine workings. We then make believe that our fractions are integers and try to thrust our one-sided viewpoints into the catholicity of the all-vision of the divine. Stopping mid-page 413, resuming there in the next reading.